Welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and I'm excited tonight to talk to Sherry and several other people on a trip to Zambia in Southern Africa. Welcome, Sherry.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you, too.
You know, as a matter of fact, it's amazing to be with you because in my mind's eye, I periodically am going along, and life actually feels remarkably normal. And then I get a map of the world in my head, and I think, oh my gosh, we are on the other side of the world in Africa. And it's just extraordinary.
That's wonderful.
Yes, it is. You know, you're just walking along down the road somewhere, and it's thousands and thousands of miles away from where you ordinarily walk down a road. It's kind of, I don't know, extraordinary.
Yes. Yes.
So we're glad to be with you.
Wonderful.
To the marvels of technology.
Yes. Yes. And who is there with you?
I was going to say, shall I tell you who we are?
That would be
so
wonderful.
We are going around the room. Jen.
Hello.
And Alex.
Good evening.
Tracy.
Hello.
And Phil.
Hello.
Hi.
And actually, as this is being recorded for the radio show, Tracy is recording, making a video of it. So we're just multimedia all over the place here in the outback, out in the bush.
That's great. Well, tell us about your trip and what you've been up to.
Oh, my gosh. It's, you know, for that feeling that what I was describing a moment ago about walking down the road and then being struck by how extraordinary it is, that it's so very, very, very far away from where we ordinarily live, and that it's so far away in so many ways. It's just so dramatically different from our regular lives in so many ways. But for me, the whole thing kind of has a, I think surreal would be the word that best describes it. You know, on the one hand, we get up, we do all kinds of normal things. We get in the car, we drive around, we go to stores, we do errands, we meet people, we have appointments, and yet everything about it is really different. And, of course, what we're hoping is that everybody is going to be inspired to want to come here because there's really no way to describe what it's like. And we talked about this actually before the show and thought that what we would like to do is tell folks a little bit about some of the moments that we've had here, not so much the experiences in the sense that we're going to, you know, give you a diary version of what we've been up to since we've been here, but just some kind of little snapshots maybe that will give a tiny sense of what it's been like. And that said, we all flew into Johannesburg, South Africa, and then to Lusaka, which is the capital of Zambia. And then we got in the car with Brother John, who is our host. Brother John is a Franciscan friar that I met in Assisi in the winter, who invited us here to launch a project that we've been working on, providing a home for 8 orphan children. And so we've been working on that. And we left Lusaka. We drove to Ndola, which is, I guess, the second or third largest city in Zambia. And we are here in Ndola, staying with the Franciscan friars at their provincial house. And it's quite lovely. The terrain is actually a lot like California in many ways. And a lot of different flowers, birds that we've never seen before, trees that are quite different and remarkable and African. So that's current. now I'm gonna kind of open it up, if that's okay, unless you have something for us.
No, that sounds wonderful. That sounds
great.
All right,
great. Good. So I'll just open it up, and maybe some other folks will talk a little bit about their impressions and some of the things that have been remarkable for them on this trip.
Yes.
What I've been struck with, this is Alex, by the way. This is our first encounter down the road at night. There are no lights along the road, and we were traveling at night to get to the Franciscan Friary, and noticing that there are lots and lots of people walking along the side of the road, traveling to get to market. And women were carrying large, very heavy loads on their heads. Just very impressive, and one of the things that I've been stuck with since I've been here is how kind and how well-received we are wherever we go. I don't think I've ever met so many friendly people in my entire life. Everywhere we go, people are just waving and greeting you in the most courteous way. They're just very, very kind people.
Wow.
Yeah, like Alex was saying about the people walking along the road, it is amazing that we're so used to cars. And it's not that there aren't a lot of cars, and when we're in the city, there are certainly a lot of cars. But out on many of the rural highways, you don't see cars. But you see just this constant stream of people walking on both sides of the road. And they're walking miles and miles and miles to get to the various places to take care of the business that they need to take care of. It's impressive. They're very thin people.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, part of that is because this is a country that's hungry.
Yes.
There's a great deal of deprivation in the sense of those kinds of goods and services. And then a great deal, I think, of also is that they are so extraordinarily active. They're just up early, and they are going and busy until late at night, until in the middle of the night. And one of the other things that they're doing to use up a great deal of energy is that they are singing and dancing almost all the time. In fact, we were just talking about this before we began talking with you, that wherever we are, when we stop and listen, there's the sound of singing and usually drumming in the background somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes there'll be two or three groups that we can hear at one time, various places, singing and dancing and drumming.
Yes.
Beautiful. Anybody else have a...
Yeah, I'd like to just go along with what Alex is saying, because for me, I think that whole welcoming atmosphere that pervades this place is just a really wonderful experience. The people, besides being so welcoming, I find so, in a sense, proud of their heritage, and there's so much now these days, particularly the women, but also the men wearing the beautiful Zambian or African material in either skirts or the whole outfits, and I think that is something that really adds to the atmosphere.
Kind of a sense of reclaiming their culture.
Yeah, a sense of reclaiming their culture, and they have a real, seems like in that welcoming, and so courteous and so polite and so proud in a way. It's not at least that I don't find it, degrading or anything like that, humbling. They're just, it's so dignified, and I find that very beautiful.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think Jen was talking with someone. We received an email shortly before we came over here, and this was someone, I believe, who had grown up in Zambia, and she referred to the Zambians as the heart-centered people. They're heart-centered people. And that certainly is our experience. We go around all over the place all the time, and there's never a feeling, I think, in any of us, of any kind of fear. It's just absent. We walk places, the kinds of places that we wouldn't walk probably in the United States, and feel completely comfortable and safe, and again, the word that people have used is welcomed. People are seem eager to say hello and to introduce themselves and have a conversation, and they seem really pleased to have visitors. There aren't a lot of tourists here, and so people are, again, proud and pleased to welcome guests and to share their country with people from other cultures. Very fun.
Well, I was just, as we were talking, it's also been my experience that we've been very, very welcomed and that the people have been extremely gracious. And it strikes me as particularly amazing given the circumstances, the life circumstances that people are faced with here. You know, we came here knowing the statistics and actually learning more statistics as we've been here. The statistics we've heard several times from numerous sources is that 3 out of 5 are HIV positive, and it's hard to believe that as you walk around in daily life, because as we've all been saying, there's so much joy, there's so much happiness, there's so much warmth in the culture that it was sort of hard. I was in disbelief at first about those statistics, and yet as you take time to stop and really talk to people, within just a few minutes of conversation, you realize that those statistics are true, because every single person you talk to has that in their life. Just the other day, several of us were out in the yard, and we were playing games with a bunch of the children, and we were playing ball with these 3 girls, and they said, they were telling us that they were sisters, and I kind of stood aside and spoke with the oldest girl, who was, I think, in the 8th grade. She's about 13 years old. And as we got talking, it came out that, in fact, they weren't all her sisters. Some of them were her cousins. She actually lived with her aunt because both of her parents had died of AIDS. And it's so incredibly common that you find that out as you talk to people. The other day, we were walking to church, and we decided to take a walk around the neighborhood before because we were early to the service. And these 2 older men just saw us because we stand out walking along the street. And they sort of took us under their wing, and we started talking to them. And within 3 minutes, found out that they were on their way to the funeral of a 35-year-old woman. So it's all the statistics are right there under the surface. And yet, as we were saying, the vibrancy, the warmth, the joy of the culture is incredible. It's very, very inspiring. And as Sherry said, we're hoping that other people will feel moved to come and experience that with us.
Yeah, in fact, it takes a little while to begin to notice that there's a whole segment of the population that's missing. There are older people, and there are very young people, but the whole parent age group, one begins to notice, is not there. So we learned another statistic the other day, and that is that actually malaria kills more people in this part of the world than does AIDS.
Uh-huh.
We were speculating about whether or not it's kind of a combination of the two, because it seems just amazing that more people could die of malaria than of AIDS when so many people are dying of AIDS currently.
Yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. I'm thrilled tonight to be in conversation with Sherry in Zambia, in Southern Africa, with several other people on a project to help AIDS orphans. And tonight they're giving us a recap of their trip, and some of the experiences that they're having there. What else have you seen, Sherry, and the rest of you there?
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
What has really struck me the most is We have just been surrounded by so many people in need here, and, you know, we're seeing the same kids, you know, days in a row wearing the same outfits and the same shoes, and, you know, a lot of, we were playing volleyball with some of the kids, and, you know, these girls are in little high-heeled wooden shoes because these are the only pair of shoes that they own. And we went out to a mission up in the Northwest Province last week, and we were greeted by, I don't know, 100, 150 children that were just ecstatic to have us arrive. And I believe we heard that about 70% of those children were orphans. And there was one little girl in particular that really touched my heart right from the very beginning. And at the end of our day, when it was time to leave, there was this kind of frenetic energy outside my window trying to get my attention that this little girl had wanted to tell me something, and they were kind of picking her up. And I started getting a little bit nervous thinking that they wanted us to take her. And as it turned out, Brother John, you know, took the little girl through the window, and what she wanted to do was drive us to her home because she wanted to give me a basket. And I was just so touched by that. You know, here she was living in, you know, this little village that didn't even have electricity. And being the visitor from America, she wanted to give me something of hers to take home.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that kind of human spirit has just been surrounding us. And even this evening, some little boys that are part of a project here in Angola came to show us some little animals and carvings that they had made, and they're part of a project. And
For street kids. So these are all boys, 120 boys in this project who have been taken in, and many of them live together, and they are learning to become family to one another because they're orphans.
Uh-huh.
They wanted to show us a couple of the goods that they had made, and we bought a little statue and a bowl, and when it was, you know, we talked to them for a little bit, and when it was time for them to go, they handed each, there were four of us that were there, they handed each one of us a little animal that they had carved out of goat stone as a gift. And it's just that type of, like, generosity that has really stood out so much to me during this trip.
Uh-huh.
I think that event that you just mentioned was kind of a high point for me, or a moment of just being so touched that these boys have nothing, and what they wanted to do was give us a gift. it's truly astounding. It's a kindness that I aspire to.
Uh-huh. Yes. Just hearing the story, I'm moved by it. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We're talking with a young woman this evening who works here in the very office that we're using for this phone call. And she's an editor, magazine editor. She went to school. She's Zambian, but she went to school in L.A.?
Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles. And then she decided that she wanted to come back here and make her life in Zambia. And we were talking about a little bit about the possibility, the potential for this culture that exists in what is our dream, part of our dream in doing this work, which is to bring more people over here and to have the American people get to know the Zambian people and experience their lifestyle. And she said, and what we agreed on was that how good it is for the people who are doing the visiting. It's not just that we come over here to offer something to the Zambian people. We receive a great deal, possibly more, in return than we could ever give. And she said, and one of the good things about it, the extra benefits, is that perhaps when you go home, you appreciate things about your own culture that you took for granted, that maybe you didn't notice before coming here. And that is certainly my experience of this. Not just the ease of our culture, but that, because our culture, we are so privileged, life is so very easy. This morning, we were working on the articles of incorporation for this little project that we're doing, this house that we've purchased for these 8 children. And it took us all day to accomplish this, because they just don't work the way they work in America. The computer may be available, the computer may be available, and it may not be. And then once the document is created, well, gosh, the printer doesn't work. And so then, you know, you have to find the printer that's going, and you have to get the, you know, and it's just, it's sobering. And also gratitude producing, that things are so easy, that we can accomplish so much with such ease in our own culture, that people really think that we don't even consider that are major stumbling blocks for people in a culture like this. And so that feeling of appreciation for what we have, and also a tremendous desire to share that, to bring some, at least some of our ease here without taking away the things that they have that we don't have. Things like more time to spend together and more community. It seems like a greater dependence on one another and a desire to be in community with one another. So it's not that we want this place to be like the United States. It's just that there's so much to appreciate in both cultures.
Yes. I hear in what you're saying a real appreciation for what we have here in the United States. And I sense that, you know, a possibility of bringing these two cultures, countries closer together.
Yes. It feels like a, you know, that kind of an image of the two hands clasp.
Yes.
I already said it, and it's late, and I can't think of a more elegant way to say it than that. But just a realization of how much we have to offer one another.
Yes. Yes.
Hi, Michael. This is Phil again. I think one of the things that demonstrated that for me was, again, when we were at the village where all the children were, it was... one of us had one or several children that adopted us. As we spent the day there walking around, letting them, they were giving us the tour of the village, showing us all the things that they really liked about, you know, their school and the different places, the market. And they, each one of us had several children holding our hands throughout the day, and it was that kind of... I think to me that just demonstrated the whole thing, the hands together and the people together. And I mean, I really felt adopted by this little 4-year-old named Vincent. And he actually took very good care of me the whole day and was quite a host. And sure, I got the, you know, the big deal, the best thing in the house, the best thing in the house. And he's little kid 4. And it was, and I think each one of us had that experience. And nobody told them anything. I mean, they're just a whole group of kids, and each one just, you know, just a whole bunch just adopted each one of us. It was, for me, that was, it was very touching, and actually, I think, demonstrated what Sherry's saying. You know, in a very small, you know, little kid, it's doing it. You know, as we're talking about it, it reminds me how much the project that we're doing here is built on that gratitude, on the desire to give back. We had hoped that Brother John was going to join us for the call tonight, but he wasn't feeling well, so he wasn't able to be here. But we hoped he would have had a chance to tell a little bit about his story and about how you felt moved to start this project, to partner with us. And we had a chance to go to where Brother John grew up. It's a compound near Indola, just outside the city, in a very, very, very poor area.
This is poor beyond what most people can even imagine.
Uh-huh. It's just right outside the city, and there's nothing. There's not electricity. There's not running water.
There are no toilets.
There are no toilets.
People live in little huts, little mud huts that are maybe 12 feet by 15 feet.
Many children in them. And when Brother John was young, he has an incredible mother who actually still lives in that house, and we met her. And she just fought for her children to be well-educated, and Brother John had a sponsor, someone who took an interest in him, someone who paid for his school fees. And we had a miraculous encounter, and we were at the grocery store the other day in ShopRite, and lo and behold, the woman who sponsored him, the woman who paid for his education when he was a little boy, there she was in the grocery store. And I have never seen two people be more excited to see each other.
Wow.
So excited to see. She hadn't seen him in years, and she could not believe her eyes.
Wow.
It was a beautiful thing. And even before that meeting, Brother John had expressed to us how he and his siblings, he has, two brothers who are living. One has died of AIDS and one sister. And that all of them, since they were very young, also had people in their lives who sponsored them, and they all were very clear that giving back is something that they wanted to do.
And they have all grown up to be professionals, to be business people, to be really extraordinary members of this community.
Yes.
All raised together, five children and their mother in this, at that time, it was sticks, four walls, and a roof that was made out of cardboard and plastic. No windows, no heat, no water, no toilet, no electricity, no anything.
Wow.
So just to give a picture of where these children came from, to grow up to be
yes.
the extraordinary humans that they are today. In
yes.
fact, his brother Ignatius is the house father in the house that we're staying here. Excuse me, Jen, I just got excited.
Huh?
And that, when Brother John met Sherry in Assisi, it was just a perfect pairing of here was the way to do it. Here was the way that he was going to be able to fulfill his dream and his siblings' dream of being able to give back to the community so that we had the financial resources to help to begin to make it happen, and they have all the wherewithal to do it. So it's an amazing kind of miraculous project.
Yes, it's extraordinary. Jen, as you were talking, I was just thinking along those lines that with Living Compassion, we have the opportunity to continue that process of sponsoring children and assisting them as they grow up, and the joy that comes from that.
Yeah. And before we lose sight of this, I wanted to mention one other giving back that has happened. Tracy, who's here with us, works for a company, a sportswear company in Colorado called Uray. And she brought over with her an extraordinary array of clothing and backpacks and hats that her company makes and that they donated. It was a gift that they sent over to the children. And it was so fun because we walked into the house. We have pictures of it. We'll get it up on the website as soon as we can. But we walked into the house, the living room of the house, and there's a sign. Should I tell them about the sign? There's a sign on the wall that says, Living Compassion Home, Peace. And there's a dove on the side of it. This sign that's like 2 feet by 3 feet that somebody has made. And so there's this beautiful house that's being put together for these children. And then Tracy began to open her suitcases. It was like Christmas.
Huh?
I mean, these children are going to be the best dressed at school.
Huh?
No question about it.
Yes.
But now, what we have, you know, that UA has kind of set the standard for us. We're asking people if they know somebody at a shoe company who could do the same kind of thing, because boy, do these kids need, now that they've got their Smith outfits, they need shoes. In fact, there are millions of people here who need shoes.
Uh-huh.
So if anybody knows anybody,
yes,
let us know.
Anybody who knows anybody who can donate shoes.
That's right. We're looking for shoes.
Yes.
Dresses. We need dresses. All the girls here, from newborn to old age, wear dresses.
Uh-huh.
Even when they play ball.
Yes, when they play football, they wear dresses.
Yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Today is a pre-recorded show, so if you have any calls, please save them until we're back on the air live with Sherry. I'm talking with Sherry and several other people who are in Zambia in South Central Africa in a city called Ndola. And they're there in a project with Living Compassion to assist AIDS orphans over there. We're going to take a break and we'll be back in a moment.
Jela abantu bonke, jela umhlaba wonke. Jela abantu bonke,
hawo batshele wena.
Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Stay tuned to KZSU at 6 p.m. today. We have DJ Decca with some great world music, followed at 9 p.m. by the Bot of Euphony. So stay tuned to KZSU. Today's Open Air show is pre-recorded. So if you'd like to call in, please wait until Sherry is live with us again and call back then. You can also email us in the meantime at openair@kzsu.org. Today's show, I'm talking with Sherry and several other people who are in Zambia in a city called Ndola. They're doing some great work with AIDS orphans, and we're going to check back in with them. They'll tell us more about what they're up to. Sherry, tell us some more.
All right. Well, I'm going to turn the floor and the phone over to Jan, who's going to tell us a little bit more about some things coming up.
Great.
When we took that break, we were talking amongst ourselves to kind of refresh our memories of some of the things that we've learned here. We've met an incredible number of people who are doing just extraordinary work here. And one of the folks we have the privilege to spend some time with is the, I guess he would be the provincial head of the friars here in Zambia. And we got to spend the morning talking to him. And one of the things he was talking about is the devastation that poverty and HIV and AIDS are having on what they refer to as the youth here, the young folks, anywhere from, say, maybe 12, 15 years old up to their 30s. And what he was talking about is it's leaving a whole generation of young people without care, without parents. So these children are left with either to live with relatives that are far from their home. Sometimes they even are raising themselves. Just, you know, maybe a 12-year-old will be the head of a household. And he was talking about how, you know, of course that has problems in itself, which are obvious. And in addition, that all of these children are growing up without the love and care of a family. And the way he put it was that we're sitting on a time bomb, that there's a whole generation that's going to be the future and are going to be the folks who are the leaders, the folks who are in charge of the country, who have been brought up without basic nurturing. And so what we realized is that a big piece of the work that needs to be done here is to provide that, not just the economic assistance of putting children in school and putting a roof over their heads and feeding them,
But that nurturing, that caring that's missing when the whole generation of folks who would be providing that are dying from HIV and AIDS. And so that's why I think Brother John is very excited about this first initial project that we're setting up, which is taking 8 children who are in that very situation, who have been orphaned, and putting them into a home, not an orphanage, not a mission, but a home, an actual home with a mother and a father, a state, you know, they've got stable income, they're a loving family. So just really providing them with that need of nurturing. And that there are many groups here who are also realizing the need for that and are doing outreach to children who are in that situation. And those children that we mentioned earlier, those 2 boys who came by today and talked to us and sold us some of the things that they made, are a perfect example of that. And the one young fellow who was sort of the leader of their group, it seemed like, was telling us how he said, we're street boys, and the way he put it is, but we've changed our minds, was the phrase he used. And he was describing to us the program that he's a part of, and essentially how they've gone from having nothing and, you know, essentially being in complete survival mode to learning a skill in a way to support themselves and beginning to turn their lives around. And that's another component that we plan for the Living Compassion Project, is that we're going to go into that compound area where Brother John grew up and start to build a community center. And what will happen, the community center will be at the community school, and we'll provide a lunch program at the school, much the way we've done for several schools in Zimbabwe, as well as doing a sort of after-school program where, instead of going home, where children have, you know, they don't have that support, they don't have anything they're really going home to, they can stay at school and get a whole variety of programs, anywhere from tutoring, assistance with their academic studies, just time to play, sports, get involved, teamwork, that kind of thing, and counseling, which is a huge need, you can imagine, for children who are losing their parents and their siblings and their, you know, people all around them are dying. So, assisting them with counseling as well. So it seems like that's a really, it's a place that can provide hope, sort of a project that can address the holistic needs. When we were talking with Brother John the other day, the phrase he used is that we're looking at the whole child, not just one piece of it, not just one part of it, but looking at the entire child and all the needs that come with it, which I think really addresses that time bomb that the fellow here at the Friary was talking about.
Uh-huh. So as you talked about a real need for nurturing for these children who have had no parents or family growing up, and also a sense for...
The beauty of it is that we came here to start one project, and now we very quickly realized there's another one that we also want to start.
Uh-huh.
Because 8 children, you know, it's a wonderful opportunity for those 8 children. And as those children grow up, other children will replace them in the home. And we have great dreams and hopes about buying another house and doing it again. And maybe that this will be a project that other groups will like and want to take on. And so we'll have these houses springing up all over the place. And still it's going to be a very small number of children compared to the children that we could reach through something like this community center, where we could bring in more volunteers from the community, people who just who are moved by the plight of these children, maybe can't take them home literally to their own house, but would still be willing to put time and energy and love and care into these kids for at least the daytime hours. And you know, it's not perfect, but it would be something.
Uh-huh.
In addition to just offering love and nurturing of a family, we found out by being here that there are like vocational schools that you can enroll in. There's actually a vocational school here at Friary where we're staying, where they can come for pretty much no money and learn a trade. And for example, if they would come to learn to be a tailor, when they leave with a sewing machine and some goods to actually get them started in businesses. So, you know, by having a community center and, you know, having someone there that could also offer a little bit of guidance of what is available, so these children just have a little bit more information on how they can, you know, turn their interest in, you know, to actually something that is going to, you know, help them, you know, survive and just, and, you know, the economy as it is.
Yes.
The other thing that could happen at the community center, it would be education, AIDS education, which is certainly starting here. It's a part of all the schools, as far as we can tell. People are becoming much more educated about the disease, and so to have that kind of reinforcement and encouragement in a community setting would be important too, because these children that we're describing in this compound don't go to school. They have no one to sponsor them, no one to pay their school fees. They don't have uniforms, that sort of thing. So by the time they get old enough to have HIV be an issue in their life, they're going to be on the streets unless we can assist them in getting into and staying into school. And so having that community center, as Tracy's mentioning, part of what would be available is that sort of guidance, counseling, that would show them the ropes and give them just that much more opportunity for success.
Yes, yes. Sherry, what strikes me about what's being shared is how much you've learned by being physically there and seeing for you.
Oh,
yeah.
You have hit it directly on the head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, one of the great things, Michael, one of the best things we did, I think, on this trip was we brought a fair amount of technology with us.
Yes.
We brought a very good recorder to record sound. We brought a video recorder. And we brought, of course, our digital cameras. And as we've been talking about the children and the project, I just keep picturing their faces, and they are some of the most adorable children you've ever seen in your life. Just kind of one after the other, we just poke each other, oh my God, look at him. And what's so neat is that that we have the images. We even have you know, some of them recorded in little interviews where we ask them their name and where they're from and what they'd like to do when they're older. And to be able to put that stuff up on our website so that people can have at least just a taste of what we've been able to experience as we're here and hopefully be moved in the way that we've been moved to really realize that, you know, these are not just statistics. This is not just a remote country. These are actual real people living this life situation that we can have an impact on.
Yes, yes. As you were talking, Jen, I just sort of imagined, you know, Zambia and the U.S. just getting closer together.
Yes, yes. And one of our visions for this compound is to go back and perhaps find a group of people. Maybe a school would sponsor the school. Maybe a city would take on, you know, that kind of partnership. We've met some Italian folks who have been coming here for something like 20 years.
Wow.
And the relationships that have grown out of that are wonderful. And they come back every year and bring more and more people. And that's their goal, to get as many people involved as they possibly can. And I think that's going to be the secret, because when we're here and we meet these people, as Jen says, they go from 3 out of 5 people are HIV positive statistics to this person whose hand is in your hands, whose eyes you're looking into, And it's just impossible not to commit to doing whatever is possible to make a difference. And as we have more and more and more of us with that attitude of mind, as we, you know, I think one of the things that's difficult, I project, one of the things that's difficult for Americans is that we can easily go to guilt. We have so much, they have nothing. What can we do? It's just overwhelming, the amount of need. It's true. It is an overwhelming amount of need. And yet, one by one, we step up and make our commitment to making a difference, and pretty soon the tide is going to turn. Pretty soon our commitment is going to be greater than the problem. Then together we'll turn them around.
Uh-huh. Taking one step at a time towards what's needed.
Example of that, you know, we had a woman, Jen, who sponsored him, and here he is turning around, and you know, he's a very integral, you know, part of the project. And you know, he spent 2 years at a mission, and he called, you know, the hundreds of children there, you know, his kids, and now 8 of those kids are a part of this house. And you know, so that is just, you know, a great example of, you know, the more you give, the more you get.
Yes. The more you give, the more you get.
Familiar phrase, huh?
Yes, it's a great phrase. I think it'll be the motto for the show.
Yeah, I think, our hearts just open and open and open and open as we do this. And you just can't help but want everybody to have that experience.
Yes, yes. I'm having it right here on the phone.
Isn't that good?
Yes.
And, you know, we are, for the benefit of the people who listen to the show regularly and think, you know, these people are not as smooth. You know how we have that kind of smooth radio thing going, Michael? And we are all so tired that we are just completely exhausted.
Yes.
And still we're having fun.
Yes.
Still, we're having fun because it's just a heartwarming kind of place to be and things to be doing.
Yes. And you know, to my professional radio ear, you all sound pretty slick to me.
Well, thank you. Huh? You are very kind and gracious.
Yes. Yes. Sure.
Is there anything else that we wanted to tell these people about? If we have time, we need to get a gardening update from Alex. Alex is our monastery gardener and came over here with an ambition to get some gardening started, and it is critical. It's crucial. One of the things that we found out is that a lot of the hunger that's going on in this country is really a lack of nutritional information. The old way of living is gone, and the survival lifestyle that has replaced that kind of tribal lifestyle, it is not providing sound nutrition.
Uh-huh.
And, people, it's great land, it's great ground, there's plenty of water, they have seeds. It's a matter of educating people to put those things together and grow a garden, and then to grow the right things in the garden so that they have complete nutrition. So Alex will tell you what he's been up to.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
Part of the project was to make a garden at the house that we are setting up for the 8 children. And I just had a wonderful experience with that, just going into the backyard and laying out what's possible there. And They have lots of space for a garden there, and just going around and looking for seeds and
buying shovels.
I had shovels, all the necessary things. I mean, the whole thing was pretty much covered in a lot of trash, plastic bags, old shoes, stashes of things.
Well, there's no garbage service here. So what people do is just bury their garbage in their backyard, and Alex found a lot of them.
A pit there that where they dumped their trash, and when we started out, it was only about, about an eighth full or so, and now it's about half full of all the things that we had sifted out of there. So, and just, it was phenomenal being able to show a couple guys there how to do the process that we're currently looking at to see how we can have them grow as many vegetables as possible to keep the soil in good shape and make things very nice for the plants that are going to grow, because they still depend on fungicides and pesticides and things like that. And in fact, some of the seeds that they own, that they produce here, are packaged with the pesticides too. So we're trying to look around to see if we can get that is not that way. So just to educate the folks in natural ways how to keep bugs and things like that away, and just start out with healthy plants and things like that. Just the two folks that I showed how to do it, they were just very enthusiastic about how to go about doing this process.
Uh-huh.
No hesitation at all to want to just get in the mud and start digging around and working really hard, and then just getting another few folks involved in that and spending a couple of days digging in the garden.
Yes.
And one of our adventures, I have no idea which one it was, but we were out on the road somewhere, and we stopped by another mission and talked to one of the fellows there. Alex had a conversation with him about the garden. We found out that maize is their primary food here. It turns into what's called, in their language, enshima. It's corn that's cooked into a sticky mush.
Uh-huh.
And so the ground at this particular place had been just destroyed growing maize with pesticides.
Uh-huh.
And so the brothers there realized what had happened, and they're in the process now of turning the land around.
Uh-huh.
They're using only natural things. They have pigs and chickens, and so they use the manure from that. So Alex brought a couple of organic gardening books, and he was able to leave one with them, because they had told us that they're bringing in an expert from a local college who's going to help them with this recovery.
Wonderful.
That's a big part. There's just so much. I was talking to one of the priests at a mission that we visited, and I said, "What needs to happen? What's going to make the most difference?" And he said, "Education, just getting kids in school and keeping them in school, educating them about nutrition, educating them about HIV/AIDS. Education is what needs to happen." So,
uh-huh.
Tremendous opportunities through relationships to just passing on the very simple kinds of information that will really make a tremendous difference in people's lives.
Yes.
Well, Michael, I imagine we're just about at the end of our time.
You are correct.
You mentioned to folks the opportunity to participate in a fundraising event for this project in October 24th.
Yes.
We have our third annual Golden Gate Bridge Walk, which benefits the work that we do in Africa.
Yes.
And very soon after we return, there'll be an update on the website about our trip and more information about the bridge walk and how you can sign up and how you can participate and all that good information.
Yes.
www.livingcompassion.org.
Livingcompassion.org, third annual Golden Gate Bridge Walk, and that's on Sunday, October 24th. And more information at the livingcompassion.org website. Wonderful. Any parting words you'd like to add, Sherry, or anyone else?
Well, I would like to just reinforce what Jen just said and mention also that's on that weekend, if people want to visit the website, we have quite a huge extravaganza plan to introduce Living Compassion to the larger community in the Bay Area, and also kind of launch some of our programs around the world. So we're hoping that people will put that weekend on their calendar and plan to come early and stay So we are convinced that the way to have a really good time is to participate fully. So when we throw ourselves into something wholeheartedly, what we get out of it is a whole heart.
Yes.
And so get there early for that weekend and help us set the whole thing up, and then stay and have a good time all weekend, and then if you want to, you can stay and help us take it all apart. And in that process, we're going to have not only a good time for ourselves, but we're going to introduce a lot of people to this work and hopefully make a lot of money to support these wonderful projects that we're over here instigating.
Yes, yes. It all sounds very exciting.
Michael, just listening to Sherry and what just keeps coming up for me throughout the last couple weeks that we've been here is that actually being with these people, and we've spent some time in an AIDS hospice and, you know, being with the kids and, you know, the look and the light in all of their eyes and these amazing, beautiful smiles that we're greeted with even in the AIDS hospice. It's just, you know, the overwhelming feeling that I come away with is we're all in this together. I mean, the only difference between me and them is our situation, our circumstances. And, you know, we just, you know, for all of humanity and all the goodness in each one of us, it just keeps coming up for me. And we're all in this together.
We're all in this together. Wonderful.
And, you know, it's a great group to be in this with.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
That's my experience also.
Yeah. And thank you for being there
to
talk with us and listen to our tale and then pass it along to all of our friends who tune in. It makes us feel good and supported to know that people are out there listening and
yes.
participating, and I know sending their good wishes our way.
Yes. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. I'm thrilled to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Fun. Hey, and if the good Lord's willing and the creek don't rise, we're going to be talking with you next week on a little better connection. Maybe in the studio, who knows? So hopefully people have been listening to this and they're going to have a lot of questions for us and a lot of further discussion, and so we can talk about it live next week, huh?
Would that be wonderful? Sherry Huber live. Great. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Today was a pre-recorded show. We had a wonderful conversation with Sherry and a group of people in Africa doing some wonderful work in Zambia. If you want to reach us off the air, you can send an email to openair@kzsu.org, and you can listen to archives of the show at livingcompassion.org. Archives of all of the shows are there. Thank you, Sherry, Phil, Jen, Alex, and Tracy for joining us today.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.